This is FSN.
Thanks very much, Ollie. It's very easy for celebrities like Leonardo DiCaprio and Pamela Anderson to get all teary-eyed about whales in captivity, which I don't support, of course. Whales being held in captivity, isn't it? They don't get too bothered by things like, well, the Israeli Defense Forces shooting women and children in Gaza. Animals! We can all get teary-eyed over animals. Cuddly animals. What about people, eh?
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv. It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, the legendary trends researcher Gerald Celente will join us live from New York City in the second hour. Love the man. Been speaking with him for many years on radio. Can't wait to speak to Gerald later on in the show. Before that, Fleet Street legend and Sunday Times best-selling author Christine Hart returns to this program. We'll be talking freedom of the press. We'll be talking Hacked Off and much more besides, and high court cases, and much more besides with the brilliant Christine Hart. That's this hour. We're live on Fab Radio 2, my website triggerwarning.tv, and as usual, I look forward to reading your tweets. So tweet the programme. Beautiful day, beautiful, beautiful day. In Manchester again, little on the chilly side, but it's been glorious. Weatherwoman and the weatherman have been telling us across the mainstream media today that it's going to be warm tomorrow and for the rest of the week. Good for the kiddies, I say. Good for the kiddies. Hi to Martin in Spain. And feliz cumpleaños, amigo. 53 today is Martin, who is what you'd call an active listener. And an active listener is somebody who participates by sending tweets and comments and stuff. And glad I am to of it. Happy birthday, Martin. Hope you're having a good day. A day even there, my friend, and I'm sure the weather is better even than the weather we're experiencing here in Manconia, which is quite lovely. Let's just crack right on. Loads to talk about before Christine Hart joins the programme. So the polls opened in occupied Palestine this morning. Israel went to the polls to elect a new Knesset general election. And effectively, because of the way all elections pan out over there, never a majority, you know, coalition after coalition, effectively means that the voters have two choices for their prime minister. The man who ordered the mass murder of Palestinians in 2014, and still does, and the commander of the IDF who oversaw Operation Protective Edge in 2014. So it's Benjamin Netanyahu and Benny Gantz. Lunatic asylum there in Israel. And Haaretz is reporting. Go to Haaretz.com. Reporting live on the election all day long. Haaretz is reporting that Likud, the party, of course, headed by Benjamin Netanyahu, the incumbent, has placed 1,200 hidden cameras in Arab polling sites. Don't you just love Benjamin Netanyahu, the biggest psychopath on planet Earth, at least that's ever held such an office as the Prime Minister of any country? Not cases. 1,200 hidden cameras in Arab polling sites, even according to Haaretz. Why is the man not under arrest? Why? This is the coward who's gotten his wife to plead guilty to the charges of corruption against him. Filthy, horrible, vile little man, Benjamin Netanyahu. Anyway, polls close at 10 p.m. tonight, and, well, it doesn't matter who gets elected in Israel, does it? The status quo remains. Let's leave that there. Doesn't matter what government is returned. Now, the House of Lords, the upper chamber, rubber-stamped the Letwin-Cooper Amendment last night. This is Brexit stuff. Don't panic. What did the Letwin-Cooper Amendment say? What did it propose? It was passed by Parliament. Well, it rules out no deal and it meant that Theresa May must ask for yet another extension. And overnight, the Lords were given, well, the Lords rubber stamped it, okay, basically saying, okay, it's passed through the House of Commons, now it's passed the House of Lords, and it's given royal assent. Don't start me on that. Don't start me on royal assent. There are still people in this country who think that the blue rinse monitor who sits on her hairy backside in Buckingham Palace is apolitical and just a relic of a bygone age for tourism. Still people who believe that. Royal assent, eh? Eh? Yeah. So Theresa May then is in talks with Angela Merkel and Emmanuel Macron this afternoon, this evening, with the European, with the UK due to leave the EU in 3 days' time. I'll give you 30 seconds to roll around the floor laughing your arses off. All right, maybe not 30 seconds. So May is asking Macron and Merkel to back her request to delay Brexit again until June 30th. There is a summit tomorrow when all EU states will vote on an extension. Cross-party talks also continue back in the UK. So you've got Labour and the Conservative Party meeting to try to find a way to break the impasse, right? Right. Faisal Islam, Sky's political editor, at least for the time being anyway, is in Paris for Sky News. So what does he think? What does the French government and what does President Emmanuel Macron make of Theresa May's request for an extension now, and how long should it be? Faisal Islam.
I think the mood music we're getting now from the Elysee is that they want to attach conditions to any longer extension. It looks like the weight of opinion in Europe is that June the 30th won't be enough time. They're not wildly convinced by the political process that has just started, as you described, with the opposition. And it seems like they think that they could go longer. The Elysee suggesting a full year would be too long. That's been suggested by Donald Tusk, European Council President. But I think where things are honing in on is the end of this year as a possible counter-offer when Theresa May goes to Brussels tomorrow and asks for an extension till June the 30th.
Yeah, Theresa May is going to say, please, can you give us an extension to June 30th? Donald Tusk and Juncker and the rest of them, they want a 1 year extension and all the rest of it. Macron is going to say, listen, we should keep you in till the end of this year. Isn't it lovely?
If that is to happen, Paris indicating that they want a series of conditions. They've been a little spooked, if not surprised, by the talk coming out of the likes of Jacob Rees-Mogg and other Tory Brexiters saying that if the United Kingdom stays in the European Union over the next few months, longer than they had hoped, longer than they expected, then they're going to cause havoc with the budget negotiation, cause havoc with the choice of European Commission President. They want some sort of negotiation, some sort of conditionality, a review mechanism perhaps in October if this extension goes longer. But I think the tell here, Kay, is that they are considering a longer extension than Theresa May is going to ask for. Not quite as long as Donald Tusk suggests a year, but perhaps towards the end of the year in December. But a lot of stuff can change when these summits actually happen in Brussels tomorrow.
Thank you, Faisal. Yeah, so we've got European parliamentary elections coming up. I'm going to found a political party tomorrow that will be called and will be known from here on in as the Monumental Bollocks Party. And it's just me, it's a party of one. I'm going to fix up my Renault Megane estate. You think that the independent media is glamorous, don't you? I drive a six-year-old Renault Megane estate. That's the truth. So I'm going to fix it up and I'm going to get those speakers on top like the old-fashioned politicians used to have. And I'm going to drive around and I'm going to hold my nose as I speak because the sound must be shit from those speakers. So I'm going to go around, please vote number one, the Monumental Bollocks Party. Richie Allen is the Monumental Bollocks and promises to speak nothing but Monumental Bollocks if you elect him to Brussels. Vote number one. Will we do it? Will we do it? No. Because I'd never get my deposit back. If I thought I'd get enough votes to get my deposit back. No, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. The Monumental Bollocks Party. Do you know, I've said this already this week. If the Hungarian government and the Italian government and the Greek government and the Portuguese governments were as Eurosceptic as we are led to believe, they would veto this extension plan, wouldn't they? I mean, if you're the Hungarian, if you're Viktor Orban, right, and you really hate the European Union and you want Hungary to leave, you would veto this bollocks on tomorrow night. You'd say, no, no, fuck him out, get rid of him, get rid of him, and force the UK to leave on Friday. But of course they won't. It'll be unanimous. What about the talks between Labour and the Tories? Cross-party talks to find the way forward. How are they progressing? I love that. Vote number one, the monumental bollocks party. Anyway, Lewis Goodall is a Sky reporter, and he's got the goods on, no pun intended. What is going on between Labour and the Tories as they negotiate themselves? What's going on?
Look, in terms of a concrete outcome, in terms of what a lot of voters, a lot of viewers might really want from this, which is a way out of the Brexit impasse, maybe both parties working together, there's no sign of that, and I don't really think it's going to come either. Of course, even if something were to come out of these talks in concrete terms, it's by no means guaranteed that they would have the votes, even with Jeremy Corbyn and Theresa May corralling their MPs together through the lobbies of the House of Commons. It's by no means guaranteed that that would work, because presumably the price of that for Labour would be at the very least a customs union. There will be many, many scores of Conservative MPs who will not support that, who've supported the Prime Minister's deal previously, and therefore they won't vote for it. She might be able to carry 100 MPs or so of hers at most. On Jeremy Corbyn's side, unless a second referendum, a confirmatory referendum, a people's vote, whatever you want to call it, unless that is attached to the deal, scores of his MPs won't vote for it either. So it's by no means guaranteed you'll get up to 330.
Yes, so the Labour Conservative Party talks are a ruse. They are bound to go nowhere, inevitably, and are now being revealed to be designed to cause 5 to midnight panic and to cement this very long extension. They've been saying this for the last 2 days, everybody associated with the Labour Conservative Party summit, that it's going nowhere and they might be weeks or even months away from coming to some consensus. Brilliant. That suits the status quo, of course. So these talks are a ruse. Remember all the politicians, every one of them, Osborne, Cameron, Nick Clegg, Jeremy Corbyn, Anna Soubry. Do you remember them before the referendum, pre-June 2016? Pre-June 2016. Do you remember them?
You, the British people, will decide.
This is a once-in-a-generation vote.
This is the once-in-a-lifetime decision.
This is a decision, a once-in-a-lifetime.
Mandelson.
We will not be taking a decision like this again in our lifetime.
There won't be another referendum on Europe. This is it.
This is a one-off choice between staying in or leaving completely.
If we as a country decide to quit, then we're out for good. There's no going back.
There's no second vote.
There will be no second referendum.
Yeah, Hammond, Sajid, Javid, they're all in there. Osborne, Cameron, right?
Referendum.
No, I don't think we need a second referendum.
Anna Soubry, that was.
The referendum is clear and has to be accepted, and we can't have a rerun of
Keir Starmer, that is.
The question that was put to the country.
And I say that with all the conviction and all
the sick Peter Mandelson again here. Yeah. Anybody else?
If we vote to leave, then we will leave.
If people vote to leave, we leave.
You vote to leave, we're out. That's it. We're going.
Yeah, but we're not. Let's leave Brexit there. Now, LGBT lessons in school. Big story this, developing all the time. The teacher who is at the centre of problems in his community in Birmingham has been speaking to Sky News and telling them that he's received death threats over this new programme to roll out these lessons in schools. The man's name is Andrew Moffat, and he's the assistant head teacher at Parkfield Community School in Birmingham. In fact, he wrote the No Outsiders programme that is being rolled out to teach diversity and equality in some schools. He says he's received death threats. Here he is, Andrew Moffat.
I've had some very nasty emails and some letters. I had a message to say you won't last long. There's been some very difficult messages to receive. When you read them, it makes you feel vulnerable. But, you know, you have choices, don't you? What choice do you have? You either let it stop you or you carry on and you make it, it makes you stronger. So you have to think, this is why this work is important. This is why this work is important, because I don't want children growing up in a world like that.
Don't want children growing up in a world like that, he said. Like what, I would have asked him. But anyway, here's two different perspectives on all of this. Caroline Farrow is a writer for Conservative Woman. She writes for Conservative Woman. She's a Catholic. You'll hear her first, and you'll then hear LGBT activist and journalist Benjamin Butterworth with Kay Burley today. Let's hear Caroline Farrow first. Kay Burley asks her, this Conservative lady, is it okay to be gay? Catchy, that. Is it okay to be gay?
The issue is not whether or not it's okay to be gay. The issue is whether or not primary school children should be taught LGBT issues beyond, let's accept that people are different, we are different, and we need to have compassion and respect for everybody. You know, we live in a multicultural society where there is a diversity of views about these issues, and this is why, you know, teaching on LGBT issues needs really to be left to the parents, because every single parent has the right to reflect their own views and teach their own views and their own values to children. And this is obviously going to differ. It is not the job of a school to be telling children what to think about what is actually quite a complex moral issue for many different people. And I think as well, it's interesting, I've been quite involved in this debate, and I myself have received violent threats and rape threats as a result of my stand on the transgender issue, for example. And I think a lot of parents are very concerned that when it comes to particularly the T part of LGBT, that their children are being taught a specious ideology, something that isn't true, and that something that is quite potentially harmful. So
Why is it harmful?
Because because sex is not something that can be changed. Sex is immutable. And I think what's coming out, if you read the Times newspaper yesterday, it's actually quite harmful to set children off down this path of believing that sex is something that can be easily changed.
Just tell me why it's harmful, Caroline.
Kay is like a dog with a bone there. Either that or she's caught what the BBC's Emma Barnett has. It's a disease known as deaf as a fucking post-itis. She's explaining it to you, woman. Listen to why she believes it's harmful. Because we've learned in recent days that it can lead to surgery and puberty blockers and other things that might have very long-lasting effects on children. Jesus.
Because and then we'll move on to our other guests. Why is it harmful?
She actually tells her again.
Because it's not true. Sex cannot be changed. And the only way in which you can change your sex is to go down a lifelong path of medication and surgery.
And Kay Burley's not finished.
Why is it harmful?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Well, clearly, lifelong medication and surgery is harmful.
She feels just like how David Davis felt when he was sitting opposite Emma Barnett 2 weeks ago in the Radio 5 Live studio. It's like when Homer Simpson goes into the witness protection program in The Simpsons. Do you remember that? And the FBI says to him, from now on, Homer, you'll be known as Homer Thompson. So when I say Mr. Thompson, you'll reply, hello, back, right? And they go on all day long. And Homer can't get it. Kay just can't get what she's saying to her.
Well, you know, when you go through that whole sex reassignment process, it has harmful physical effects. And of course, you know, we don't know what the long-term effects of things like puberty blockers are. We don't know what the long-term effects of taking cross-sex hormones are. You know, when we perform surgery, I understand the time of day, so I've got to be quite careful. When we perform surgery on people, we are creating actually an open artificial wound which needs lifelong care. This is really major traumatic surgery, and this is not something that we should be normalising to children. So, okay, of course,
okay.
It's...
Okay, says Kay. I think she gave a good answer there about the life-changing surgery and all the rest of it. That's just me. But then my opinion would be well known to you if you've listened long enough. So LGBT activist and journalist Benjamin Butterworth, well, he's just horrified by what the Catholic woman had to say.
I'm quite horrified by what Caroline says.
She didn't say anything very horrifying, really, but anyway.
There is no auspicious ideology of gay and trans people.
She never said anything of the sort, by the way.
The fact is that LGBT people exist in schools, whether they are the students, the parents, the teachers, the other people working around.
Yeah, we know that. Some children are gay, some of the people working in schools are gay, the cleaners as well, we know, move on.
Around the school. And what the service that Andrew Moffat has been doing, the No Outsiders programme, it simply says that whether you are gay or trans, whether you have two mums or two dads, whether you're from a particular religion or a particular race, that you should not be an outsider in school.
We don't need to tell children that. We don't, historically. I went to a secondary school in Lisdoggan in Waterford City, known as St. Paul's. It was co-ed. There were boys and girls there. I went to that high school in 1987. It was known in the school at that time that there were several lads, older lads and lads in my year, who were gay, and nobody really cared. Yes, one or two bullies or one or two morons would have said things to them, but by and large, people don't care. Kids are fundamentally decent. They either mind their own business, they ignore, or they just get along. We don't need to be telling children, listen, let's have a lesson today about gay being okay. Children are more than capable of coming to that conclusion themselves.
And I think the fact that Caroline opposes that is deep.
She doesn't oppose anything like it. She never said anything of the sort. She said it should be left up to parents to introduce these things to children, not schools.
Concerning. Because so many kids, gay kids, grow up thinking that they are not welcome and not accepted. And they develop mental health issues. They feel rejected. They get bullied in
school. Ah, what a load of bollocks. Let's just leave that there. Nothing from the LGBT activists, nothing new, nothing interesting, nothing by way of genuine research into this. And you got fairly, I'm not a Catholic, I'm not a Christian, but you got fairly reasonable, reasoned, thought out, passionate, a compassionate argument from the Catholic conservative writer. That's where I'm going to leave that one there. Shall we get our guest this hour on the line? Shall we? I think it's time that we did. Now, we're on Twitter, of course, always. Do tweet the programme. It's at Richie Allen Show. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Lots of tweets already on some of the monologue. I won't read them. Forgive me for that. They're good. I'm looking at them now. Patrick Faisal, Spirit Samba, Gail, Neil Gardner. There's lots of really interesting stuff being said there. But I want to spend more time with Christine. So let's get Christine on the programme. Again, comments on this too at Richie Allen Show. Christine has been on this programme several times and I like her a lot. I knew of her for many years without ever knowing her or without ever interviewing her. Her byline has appeared on massive stories for the Sunday Times, the Sunday Express, the Mail and the News of the World. In fact, she spent 10 years at the Daily Mail, interviewed IRA senior members, met and wrote about Ian Brady, the Moore's murderer as well, and lots. I could be here all day talking about her. In fact, as I'm introducing her, there might be a wee problem there with connecting with her on Skype. Doesn't seem to be connecting very well. So rather than get to the end of this introduction and then say hello and she's not there, I think we'll take some music and we'll sort out the problems, right? That's what we'll do. Some music. Here's Duran Duran, by the way. From the movie A View to a Kill, which, if I remember, was the last James Bond film starring Roger Moore. Christopher Walken was in it too. Back with Christine Hart in a minute. Beating to the fire. Right, let's cut it short. Music from Duran Duran. The time is now 27 and a half minutes past the hour. As I mentioned there, just before I called Christine, massive bylines, massive stories for the Sunday Times and Sunday Express, Sunday Times best-selling author, investigative journalist, News of the World, Daily Mail. Amazing career, really. And has been on this programme several times over the last couple of years. And not most recently, but last year we talked about the group Hacked Off and her dispute with them and the Sun newspaper. Allegations that when she was at the Priory Treatment Centre, she spied on celebrities and was paid by the Sun to do so. That hasn't gone away, that. And we're going to talk about that and more this afternoon. Christine Hart, welcome back to the show. Chris, welcome back. How are you?
Oh, hi, Hi, Richie. Yes, I'm okay. I'm glad I can hear you. I couldn't hear you a minute ago, so I'm just relieved.
The wonders of technology. And Skype has been around now for about 15 years. I would have thought the old skeletons or the old inconsistencies would have been ironed out, but you still get some problems with it. We've always got the old dog and bone if we need to do that. Anyway, thanks for coming on. Is this still an issue? Because taking you at face value as I do, and I know you to be reliable and I know you to be honest, I can't find any information online about how this is progressing in terms of Hacked Off and Hugh Grant and others who are still chasing the Sun newspaper, Murdoch, your own part that you played in that, or that they allege you played in it. Where is it legally, Christine, this complaint that you spied on celebrities and were paid by the Sun to do so? How's that going?
Well, they've put me out of work. I mean, it's been online now for a long time in their magazine, and they, you know, obviously when employers, because, you know, I'm a journalist, I go for work, and, you know, it links me with the phone hacking, and then I get knocked back, and basically I've got 2 weeks to leave my rented flat, and then we're going to be, you know, basically living on the street, because the housing, I live in London, and the housing officer, you can't go and see the housing officer. So they've got adverts everywhere saying, have you got a property? Let it to a Syrian family. We can bring a Syrian family over. We'll pay you up to £2,000. There's posters like that everywhere. And yet for the locals, they can't even answer the phone to them. So I'm going to be homeless in 2 weeks. And it's directly because of this campaign of hatred by Hugh Grant and Max Mosley, through Hacked Off. Well, basically,
is it fair? Hang on a second now, because you know I've got to do this. You're a real journalist. Is it fair to be blaming Grant for this? I mean, Mosley and the Impress group, the regulator, I've got a massive problem with that, and you and I have spoken about that. But it might be unfair to imply that Hugh Grant has got some sort of vindictiveness or some personal grudge with you. I'm no fan of Hugh Grant, but I will accept, even though I'm no fan of him, I think he's being used by those who do want to end freedom of the press based on the fact that, you know, he was hacked and he was harassed. So I'm not sure that Grant would be fair to insinuate that he's got some personal grievance with you personally. Go ahead.
Well, I think there's a vindictiveness there. I mean, I spoke to Impress and I said, get it down, because the fact is, when I go for interviews, they're pointing it out and they're saying, you know, blah-de-blah. So it is affecting me. So I went to Impress and I said, take it down. And they said, well, you've got to point out which bits are incorrect. And then they're coming back and saying, well, you know, this we're just reporting as it's been reported in court. Now, what's happened? Graham Johnson, as you know, came to me, and he works for Hugh Grant, as you know, he's always on the phone to him. They go out drinking together. So you can't say they're separate. I mean, it's his company, really. So he's working under his direction. He came to me and said, Hugh Grant will make my book into a movie. Now, it's not that far out of the realms of possibility, because if you look online, you can see that Jane Campion's sister Anna was going to make a movie out of Searching for Daddy. So that's online already. So it wasn't, you know, like it's that uncharacteristic that would happen. OK, so I said, well, fine. And they said, all you've got to do is say you spied in the Priory for the Sun. So, I mean, I know, you know, I shared it with before and people said underneath, well, you know, you shouldn't have accepted the 15 grand bribe that they were offering you. But the fact is, I didn't accept it. Now, I went to meeting with Graham and meeting with the MP, Evan Harris, went out to dinner. We talked about it. Evan said, you can do it the nice way or the nasty way. And if you don't cooperate with us, things will get really stressful for you in your life. Now, I was an unemployed single mother, so life obviously is stressful anyway. I felt a little bit angry about that. And, you know, so I had the choice as a single mother who was, you know, not able to find work because of all this going on. They were doing stories about me. So I had a choice either to get on the good side of them and cooperate with them. So I decided to. So I accepted, I signed a contract to say I'd spied at the Priory on these people, and that I'd spied on Jerry Halliwell having a baby in the Portland. And I got to the point, they put me up in a, they paid for me to go and live in a riverside, a beautiful riverside house. And I moved in there. Yeah, I accepted that. And it got to the point where I decided that because it would entail lying to a judge, that I couldn't do it because I didn't spy on these people. Okay. Now, I was asked by various journalists, but I chose to not do it. And I chose to tell my therapist, who was Robbie Williams and Kate Mosses, Ruby Watts's therapist, Mark Collins, who runs the Priory.
Yeah.
He has shares in it. And, you know, he's a friend of mine. He's my therapist. I confided this in him. And he said to me, well, just tell them the opposite of what is, or just say, yeah, I saw that one. They'll get sued. So I did that. And they got sued a lot. And I can even, you know, Caprice was one person that sued them. There was a few others that sued them. So I thought, well, if I get them sued, they, you know, they won't ask me to do that. I'll just get, you know, proper journalistic work, which I was doing. And it didn't really work out. And then there was a whole scenario with the same guy who was bullying me left, right and center, saying, you've got to do this, you've got to spy there. And so in the end, I was pretending to him, you know, that I was, just to keep my job, because he said, I'll push you out if you don't do it. And I needed my job, and I did enjoy my job. And so eventually he ran this kind of weird scam on poor Heather Mills.
Hold that thought for a second. No, because I know there are people hearing this for the first time. So we've got all the time. We've got half an hour from here if we need it, 35 minutes. And look, I don't have to tell you how it goes. You're a journalist and a broadcaster yourself. Christine is not only a vastly experienced Fleet Street journalist, but a very successful one. Rubbed shoulders with the people she's mentioned for years. She's not a name dropper. This is a fact. She knew these people. She spent time in the Priory herself for her own reasons, and we've gotten into that on programmes past, and we might get into it again in the future. Now, she's talking about being approached by people connected to the very successful actor Hugh Grant, people connected to Max Mosley. These people want to impose a very austere, a very stringent press regulator in this country, which would really be the death of freedom of the press. I've talked a lot about what they want to do on the programme before. They're desperately keen to get to Murdoch and others like him and to expose him and to try and bring him down and all the rest of it. So at a particularly vulnerable time in Christine's life, Christine says, I'll take her at face value. I've never met Christine, but I've been interviewing her over the last couple of years. At a difficult time in her life, they came to her and said, look, we'll get the rights to your Sunday Times best-selling book, Searching for Daddy, which is a brilliant book, fantastic, sold hundreds of thousands of copies. You've just got to admit or go on the record and say that you spied on people while you were at the Priory at the behest of Murdoch's son, and so on, so on, so on. And not in the best of situations. Now, a lot of people, Christine, will be really pissed off at you, and they will say it's unacceptable that you agreed to do that. And, you know, and you know this, you're a big girl, right? You know this. There'll be people listening to this, and that's absolutely unacceptable that she agreed to do it. Some would say, well, fair play, she recanted at a later stage, and she agreed to do it. She then, as she's been explaining in the last few minutes, then said, well, no, not going to go in front of a judge and perjure myself and lie and say that. And of course, that brought about problems. I'm desperately sorry to hear about your housing situation, and we can come back to that in a few minutes' time. I genuinely am sorry to hear that. And I know how difficult it is to be in the middle. I don't know how difficult it is personally, but I can imagine somebody of your experience to be in the middle of this mess, trying to find work and get editors to trust you and all the rest of it is difficult. I appreciate that. So where are we with all of this now then, with these people?
Well, it's gone to court, and I got together with another journalist who they had smeared. Now, he's an ex-editor of the Mail on Sunday. They had smeared him. He was very angry with them. He'd gone to Impress. Impress then had said no, whatever. They had a cheat to come back to me today, Impress, and say, because I said Mosley and Hugh Grant are angry. And of course, they want blood. And why are they going for my blood? Because, you know, I came into the press via them calling me the devil's daughter. So I said, I had my life ruined and I had my marriage prospects ruined. And I only went into it because there was nothing else to do. So I know how they feel, but they can't just get blood out of me. Now, what happened? I got the sack because this guy, the same guy that was bullying me to do the spying, he did a big scam on Heather Mills, sent her fake emails. Then he threw me this mobile pay as you go and said, speak to her. Now I spoke to her and then he went to Rebecca, who I worked, Rebecca Brooks, worked alongside. And he said, oh, she cares more about Heather. Listen to her, you know, putting Heather before News International. So I just got dropped. And when you get dropped, listen, I've been working for News 20 years. They don't even answer the phone. When you ring up and, you know, they hear it's you, they just hang up. Every member of staff does that. And it's a really weird, you get totally, everything shut down to you. It's a kind of weird, it's weird, you know what I mean?
And what does it mean then, if you went around the corner to the Daily Mirror, or you went around the corner to the Express, does it mean that, unknown to you, they've been in touch with these people saying, listen, she might be brilliant, but she's trouble, give her a wide berth. Is that what happens?
No, not really that. No. After the hacking came in, a lot of the newspapers, I used to work for the Daily Mail, and the Daily Mail dropped anybody that was connected with investigations work. And because I'd gone into Fleet Street as a private investigator, but then around 1998, I started writing about the Omar bomb. And then I went to Belfast, worked for the Sunday Times, got my bylines in there, and then sort of was more of a journalist. But so anybody that had been an investigator, they dropped them. They wouldn't speak to them. It was really, you know, I was really cut out, but I had the sun. And so when that happened, I actually had nothing. And, you know, it was only ages later that Graham Johnson, now I knew Graham Johnson and I'd introduced him to the IRA in Kilburn and he knew me as a journalist. But now when he writes about me, he just calls me a blagger, which is kind of disgusting.
Now, hang on a second now. So you mentioned this at the beginning of our conversation today. So this is hacked off and in press. They're putting out an kind of like an e-zine or an online magazine. And in this, of late, you've been mentioned in a derogatory way.
Yeah. They're saying that I dressed up in a white coat. I pretended to be a doctor called Dr. Penelope Harris. And I was going around different hospitals spying. And I was ringing up saying I was a psychiatrist to the Priory. Now they know my name because I was, you know, I go there, I go to their parties, everyone knows me there. So how would I possibly ring up and say, oh, hello, this is Dr. Penelope? They'd be like, I've got quite a distinctive voice, I think. So they'd be like, well, Christine, that's you. Do you know what I mean?
And Hang on a second, Christine. Would somebody else have been doing that? It might sound like an irrelevant question, but it is kind of relevant. You swear that you weren't doing that when you were at the Priory. Could it be that the Sun newspaper and News of the World had other pretend patients in these clinics who were posing as, first of all, as drug addicts or as, you know, whatever, or posing as counsellors? Was that going on? Were the newspapers doing that?
I think that, and I think the celebrities knew it, right, that when they went in the Priory, there's practically cameras on the gates, that as soon as they got in there, other patients, I think there was doctors, nurses, cleaners, people like low-paid jobs, who would see, you know, Russell Crowe or whatever, obviously not him, but do you know what I mean? And then they would ring and then they would sell the story. Of course, that went on. It's a big place. It's like a beautiful white castle. And it's not, you know, it's got the big grounds and it's, you know, you can walk in. Well, obviously, when you're a patient, you can walk in. And of course, there's a canteen where all the celebrities go. And when I got treatment, I went in there. I could see them with my eyes. So I'm sure other people could see them with their eyes. But as soon as Fleet Street found out, obviously, because I was friends with journalists and editors and I would go to parties, you know, it kind of got Chinese whispers, like I would sleep over at a girl's house and then she found out I was there. Then it got spread round and then I got nagged and bullied. Do you know what I mean? Like, will you find out with this? Will you find out that? Will you find out the other? The same as, you know, when they found out I knew various serial killers, they would hassle me to find out. You know, journalists can be really quite aggressive. And so in my defense, I would say, yeah, I'll check that for you. But then I didn't bother. Do you know what I mean? And so what Hacktoff now have got this journalist, Nick Parker, they've got his emails going, oh, Christine checked at the Priory to see if someone was there. Christine checked on Gerry Halliwell. Well, of course he's going to say that. Do you know what I mean?
But is there any hard... You see, it's one thing to make an allegation like that. It's another thing to substantiate it with some hard evidence, like phone records, or, I mean, email would have been in its infancy then, but do they have any evidence? Have they claimed that they've got any evidence?
Well, that's what they're claiming. And what they've done through these other journalists, because there's other journalists involved, and there's quite powerful ones. There's a journalist from The Telegraph, and they came to me and they said, Christine, do you know what this is all about? And I'm like, well, no, but I know I'm under fire. I'm going to be like on the street living in my car because they've targeted me. And I said, what is it about? And they said, it's the left wingers attacking the right wingers, and they want the death of the right wing press so they can get a left wing government.
Right, so this is what it is. This is the crux of it now, because no disrespect to you, your CV makes mine look absolute Mickey Mouse. You've done, you know, you've written for some of the most widely read newspapers in the world, not just in the UK, and your book was an incredible success. So with absolutely no disrespect to you and the great career you've had, you're Christine Hart, you're a journalist, you're an Indian. It's the Chiefs they want, right? It's the Chiefs they want. And by Chiefs, we don't just mean Murdoch. It's the actual press itself. They want to usher in a kind of a new era where the press is not the... Look, I know people have every right to be pissed off with the News of the World and The Sun. You've only got to look at Liverpool and Hillsborough.
Yeah.
But also, I've also said, forget The Sun, it's a rag, it's... Yeah, the Hillsborough thing was terrible. Kelvin McKenzie, dreadful stuff. And I don't buy The Sun. But we spoke about this before, you and I. The News of the World has done some extraordinarily in the public interest, revelatory journalism, really important stuff. And they want to rid their lives, or they want to rid that from... They want to get rid of that because, they're, you know, public interest journalism is what they ultimately want to destroy. That's what you believe, Christine, this is all about.
Yeah. Well, people more intellectual, more politically connected than I am understand that. You know, I didn't get much of an education. I was too busy getting over my childhood sexual abuse. So these are people that are highly educated, and they told me this is what's going on. So basically, they believe that they can't get elected if there's a right-wing press. And so they want everything to be a left-wing press so they can get in power. And then this country will be even more of a communist dump than it already is, you know. I mean, they want high immigration. I mean, I can't believe that I'm homeless, like 2 weeks away from living in my car, can't get speaking to a housing officer, and yet there's posters. I'm gonna take a picture of one as well, and there's posters saying, you know, do you want to rent your house out, we can get a lovely Syrian family, and with a picture of a Syrian family, you know. I mean, this is, I mean, what's going on? And also,
well, tell me for a minute about your barrier to work. Again, I don't want to sound like I'm bigging you up all the time, but you're an astoundingly good writer. So how can it be that somebody like you can't write for something, whether it's, you know, whether it's you know, a popular interest magazine, a hobby magazine, I don't know anything. How can you not get work?
I don't know. They don't like a connection with this. And then they say, oh, it's an ongoing court case. But what's happened now, there's a lawyer called Chris Hutchins who has gone forward to the judge. I think I can say his name, Justice Mann. Am I allowed to? But I am not allowed to speak to him. Now, in his statement, which I've got hold of, it says all this. It's quite funny in a way. It's got everything that... It's Graham Johnson, when we sat together, and I know Graham, we go back years, we drank together. I think I snogged him once. So you're talking to an old mucker of mine. So he said to me, oh, you know, I work for Mosley and Hugh Grant. He said, I'm going to tape you, but make it out like we've just met when I turn the tape on. So I said, yeah, that's okay. He said, and say these things in the tape. Now, it's before I pulled out. So he's got tapes of me saying, yeah, I did wander around the Priory and I did pretend to be Dr. Penelope Harris. And he's given it to this Chris Hutchins guy, who's said it in front of the judge. She's admitted it on tape. She's this. But it's not really fair on the judge, you know. And so I have been sitting with The Sun. I went through every single piece of work that I ever did. and, you know, explained everything on each bit of job. And I remembered, so I had a lot to say about every single job. It took about a week, 8-hour days for a week. And so they've got all that. But I have been told that they might take a fall. Now, this makes me really concerned here, because I'm concerned about Murdoch. What is Murdoch doing in this? And why hasn't he decided? Why send his lawyers to sit with me? Now, they go away saying this will go to trial. They're very intelligent people that I sat with. These lawyers are the cream of the cream. They're awesome. And they said, well, we'll go to trial. This is brilliant. They're very pleased with it, even though I signed a confidentiality agreement to say I wouldn't speak about it. I'm speaking up now because I'm concerned, okay? They can sue me. They do what they want, right? So I am concerned that I have heard through various sources, connections of mine, that Murdoch is just going to take a dive on it. Now,
what do you mean by a dive? Basically admit the wrongdoing, accept it and pay the fine.
Yeah, and pay the fine. Now, why is he doing that? Because, I mean, he might not. This might be, you know, they might go to trial. So they've either got to go to trial or pay up. I'm concerned about Murdoch, you know. I mean, all of a sudden he's been thrown Jerry Hall.
Yeah,
I mean,
but do you know what? Just before you say that, if I'm the head of Murdoch's defence team, or if I'm his legal advisor on this, I've only got a couple of questions. I'm going to say to Murdoch, during the time that Christine was at the Priory, can it be shown that stories were appearing in the Sun with intimate details about the lives of these celebrities? Stories either by Christine or by other journalists. And if those stories were not appearing in the Sun at that particular time that you were in the Priory, well, really, that mitigates the agreement you made with Johnson to take the money for the, you know, for the Hugh Grant production of your book. So what was going on while you were in the Priory? Were stories appearing in the Sun with intimate details of these celebrities' lives?
Probably they were, but not with intimate details. It was just like, you know, such and such was there, such and such. But that didn't come from me, Richie. You know, that you'd see a celebrity and next thing you'd be reading the newspaper and you'd see that they were in there. Do you know what I mean? There was definitely a hotline, but it didn't come from me. I think you have to answer your own counsel. You have to think, well, do I want to ruin somebody's... I personally do think, I know it's jaundiced, that they went in there to see Mark Collins. He is really good. He's got this way of... he's got a special hypnosis. He can, like, take you back to your childhood. He's phenomenal. I don't blame them for seeing him. But sometimes I went to see him at Basil Street. Now, Basil Street is totally different. And you go in there, it's in Knightsbridge. It's completely confidential. But the celebs chose to wander around the canteens and go into... you know, it's a big white castle, you know. They chose to go in there, you know, because part of it's a bit sexy. Oh, look, you're in rehab, gotta go to rehab. Do you know what I mean?
It was like, cool. It was cool at one time.
It's cool as hell.
I used to read these stories. So in the tabloids years ago, you would get some information about a celebrity being in rehab, but that was it. That was all you got. Now, sometimes you got some details, things that the celebrity must have confided in somebody. And I would have always assumed that that was somebody working in catering, somebody working in cleaning, somebody working in nursing, or somebody working in counselling. I often wondered about these places, you know, how does the rich person or the celebrity know that what they're saying is not being leaked to the press for big money? Because I'm sure that there are plenty of Fleet Street journalists who would have been happy to garnish even their own wages to get some scoops on whoever was in the Priory, right? I'm right in saying that.
Well, from what I didn't have contacts, and obviously I didn't have contacts that would give me stories. You know, all I got was various journalists saying, we've heard that this is person's in there, blah, blah, blah. But they would get, they would have details. And mostly, as far as I could find out, these people that had that were people that had been on staff for a long, long time, and they'd been around when the phone rang. You know, the phone would ring with somebody and then they would get a strong contact. And often it was like celebrities' drivers or friends that they'd then fallen out with, people competing with them in work. You know, like the Truth Movement, you get various radio hosts that hate each other and they try and, you know, affect them in some kind of way. Or people's publicists, again, because you got the cool thing. I'm in rehab, you know, I've got my dark glasses on, you know, aren't I sexy and with it? And, I had to look at some of them going to that beautiful big place with its big grounds and swanning around in gorgeous clothes and going to the parties they had there. There was parties there and they always had loads of celebrities in them. And there was like basically normal people like me. I mean, I was a journalist. I bumped into Ron Wood one time and Ronnie Wood had sat next to me on a flight to Belfast where I'd been going to interview the real IRA. And he'd been chatting to me and it was quite funny. He was confiding everything in me. And I turned around and said, I'm a journalist for the News of the World. And he went, you're kidding? And I said, yeah, I am. And it was quite funny that the staff put us together in these first class seats.
Yeah.
And I saw him at the Priory at one of the parties and he went, oh, how are you doing? And I said, fine. I said, I hope, you know, you're not thinking I'm looking at you. And he was like, no. But, you know, that was how it was, you know.
Well, it would have been. I mean, you would have been very well known. And anybody, you know, who was in the public eye bumping into you would have been watching their P's and Q's. Now,
I think Mark would have told them. I think, like, you know, I mean, Ruby Wax used to come in and out when I was there. And I think Mark would have told her who I was. I think because he was like that. And he used to say to me, I used to come in, oh, how come you can't work for those creeps and it's sadistic. And we used to talk about it for hours on end. You know, I was so open. He was my therapist. So I told him everything, you know.
You told, and for anybody who wants to know Christine's own personal story, those interviews are on her own channel on YouTube and they're on my channel as well and they're on Podomatic. Now, I want to get into what this might be really all about.
Oh.
Impress, of course, for our listeners, funded by, amongst others, by Max Mosley, very controversial guy, of course, for many reasons. Back in 2016, I talked a lot about this, as did you. It became the first officially recognised press regulator and it was given Royal Charter recognition, despite the fact that to this day, no major newspaper anyway in this country recognises it or has signed up to it. It's very controversial. The Culture Secretary, former Culture Secretary Karen Bradley, has described it as a threat to a vibrant, free local press. It's been rejected by all the big nationals. Has this? One of the things they wanted to do, or want to do, is they want to bring in this thing whereby if a newspaper is sued for libel by anybody, by a celebrity or by a member of the public, the newspaper's got to pay for the trial. It's got to pay for the legal representation for its accusers. I remember talking about this at the time back in 2016, even going back before that and talking about it with you. This is everybody who's interested in freedom of speech, freedom of expression, and in a free press should be pretty terrified of what the plans are. People like Max Mosley and the group Hacked Off, the campaign group, what their plans are for the press in this country. If they get their way, Christine, it's the end of a free press in this country, right?
Well, yeah, and they want a left-wing press, whatever, you know, whatever that means, those left-wing values put on us all, like, you know, the high immigration, the, you know what it all means. You know, I'm not right-wing, but I don't agree with that, you know?
So a landscape that would ultimately favour the progressive press.
Yeah.
Right, the press that, yeah, is traditionally in favour of open borders, a press that supports membership of the European Union, and a press that's in favour of multiculturalism and immigration. And again, our interviews are there for anybody who wants to hear them. That's not your politics. You're not on the far right. Not that it matters whether you are or not. But it's not your politics. And that's where they wanted to go. There's been a bit of a halt to their gallop, though, in terms of the Nationals refused to do, effectively, it's not the best way to put it, but the papers won't do business with them. Where are we with all
of it? But where is Murdoch on all this? You know, I have to look at, I mean, they're all the Hollywood cabal, aren't they? And he's part of the elite. Isn't he a member of the Knights of St. Malta? And
I've heard it said. Yeah, I mean, that sort of thing. I don't know for sure, but yeah, I've heard it said. So
he's with Cabal, and all of a sudden he's got, you know, there was the phone hacking and, you know, the paper, that paper died. It didn't particularly need to. And, you know, this is happening now. And in the middle of it all, he gets the gorgeous girlfriend. I mean, I'm just a little bit suspicious about Murdoch, but we'll see.
So you think, so your own story, the part that plays in the overall hacking thing, is ultimately designed to bring Murdoch and the major newspaper owners to heel, where they agree to accept the regulation of Impress. That's what you think it's all about.
Yes, I do. I do. I do think it's highly suspect. And I think it's highly suspect that he's not going to fight this in court. I mean, why sit with me for so long to, you know, go over every single job? Why put me under contract? But I'm not allowed to say anything to anybody. And here I am talking to you. But I just feel concerned with it at the moment. I'm not going to be somebody's pawn on the chessboard that's just squashed and used, you know, just basically used, you know.
Absolutely. And before, because I want to finish up with, you know, I don't want to be depressing you, but talking about your own situation. But last, it was last week, because like yourself, I read every single newspaper. I don't know if you still do, but I do every day of the week for this programme. But last week, didn't the PRP basically confirm or recognise Impress? That's the press recognition panel, by the way, if anybody doesn't know the PRP. I think last week, 2 weeks ago, was it? 2 weeks ago, they confirmed Impress as their approved independent press regulator. That's very worrying. And if that's true, and I think it is true, Impress is now, well, yeah, it's gaining momentum all the time. I mean, we know it's already regulating 109 small titles. So
they said to me this morning, because I said, you know, I feel this is, it was a campaign of hatred against me. And they said, you're abusing us. And if you carry on abusing us, then we're not going to speak to you. False allegations are abusive. So I copied it and pasted it back. And I said, but your false allegations about dressing up in a white coat, calling myself Dr. Penelope Harris, to a man that I loved, you know, I adore Mark Collins. So basically shitting on him, basically saying to his face, oh, yeah, but basically shitting on him, trying to ruin his setup. That's his, it's like me, Richie, coming round your house, you know, as your friend, you know, I respect, you know, I really like coming round your house and sort of looking through your drawers and going to repeat it somewhere. I just wouldn't do that. And I absolutely adore Mark Collins. Anybody that's had therapy with someone they like knows how you get a complete, you know, transference on the man you go and see. And all his female patients absolutely kiss the ground he walks on. I mean,
does anybody,
I
take that, you know, I don't know, but you know, you're here. It's terrible for me and it's terrible for you when you've done your own interviews online and on YouTube, and that it's difficult because when you approach the other side for comment, as we are obliged to do as professionals, they just don't get back to us. You know, I'd like to get the other side of this, but they just never, I mean, in previously when you've been on, I've gotten in touch with any number of people mentioned and named and said, look, I've had Christine Hart on, you know who she is, come on the program and have a chat with me, and they just don't want to do it. Does anybody remember Dr. Penelope at the Priory? Is there anybody corroborating any of the stuff that Pat got reclaiming? Nobody. You see?
That's not. It's all, you know, they're all friends. There's not anybody in press is friends with Byline. So it's like, literally, I mean, it's crazy. It's just silly, isn't it? It's not an independent. But I have got a documentary filmmaker and I have got The Telegraph interested. And they're all, because of my past, because of the serial killers thing, and because I've been quite a high profile person, there's a story there. So they're monitoring it, and they were involved right at the beginning, Richie, when Graham Johnson first rang me. I spoke to Sylvia Jones, who used to work for the BBC, and she said, right, I'll arrange for someone to tape you up. So when I went along to have dinner with these people, I was taped up anyway. So right from the word go, the other side knew. So they're saying, oh, this went this way. But it all should be brought before a judge, all of it, not just the judge hearing from a lawyer, hearing what Graham Johnson has got to say. When I, you know, when they bribed me with the money and said, right, say this into the tape, and then and now it's got put in front of this poor judge. I mean, because they're making...
It's always going to haunt you that, you know. You are a big girl and you know this. It's always going to come back to bite you in the backside. In terms of that case, that you did take that money and you did say... On
yes,
the record.
But I didn't. I didn't take it. So
no, you didn't take the money in the end. No, of course, no.
But I wish. I pulled out because I said. And do you know what? As well, they're not people to screw with. They tell me some horrible stories. So I thought again, I'm getting involved with gangsters in a way. So I said, no, I don't want your money because I felt, well, I'm lying to them in a way because you know. Evan Harris was saying, you can say, because I wouldn't be able to sort of stand up before a judge. Like, you know, I would say, no, I could stand up before a judge, but I'm not capable of doing that. So I said, do you know what? I can't take your money. I can't do it. I'm not that kind of person. I will bottle out in the end of it. And I'm not going to like take their money and, you know, not give it.
So,
no, money was taken. And as soon as I said that, the River House, they did pay for that. The deposit and a month's rent for that gorgeous house with a boat, and it was totally beautiful. Evan Harris supposed to come round for dinner, and he kind of schmooched me like there would be a relationship between he and I because he knew I was attracted to him. And as soon as I did that, I can't say they came, but I was burglarized, and all my laptops were taken, and all my cameras, like all my journalistic equipment, and my jewelry, like I got Gucci watch, I had gold jewelry, rings, just like you can see it was on my dressing table, all laid out near the laptops. It wasn't touched. So, and there was white carpet and wasn't even footprints.
It was the recording equipment they were after. I remember we spoke about this.
And it was a professional job, Richie. The CID came, they dusted, and I said, I didn't even know that they'd broken in. Now, that was really thick, fluffy, white down carpet that, you know, and yet it was pristine. I mean, this was a professional job. And then I rang Graham Johnson and Evan, and they said, oh, it was just heroin addicts. Like, can you believe it?
Nonsense, yeah. Look, we're...
And
we're,
they
we're,
said to me, they cool. said to me, oh, just be grateful that you... Because I was living there with my little son, 13-year-old son. And they said, just be grateful that you and your son are safe. Think about that. Like, oh, just forget it, bitch.
Well, it doesn't.
Now we don't need you anyway.
You know, if that was said to you, if it was, and look, you're telling me, I'll take it at face value, it doesn't get any lower than saying that to a mother, you know, threatening her child. I want to finish on this. First of all, I hope the circumstances improve for you personally quickly. And do stay in touch about that. I mean that. I hope that gets sorted. As an excellent writer, you really should be writing features and stuff and giving them to the editors and the people that you've known over the years. And even if you've got to do that under a pseudonym, there's definitely a way back into mainstream writing for you because you're an excellent writer, Christine. You know, I mean, that goes without saying. So I wouldn't give up on that. You know, if it has to be under a pseudonym or whatever, you've got plenty to say. And you can write features about so many things, true crime, you know, relationships. You really, there's nothing you can't do. So I'd be looking at that if I were you. I'd love to be able to write like you. I wouldn't give up on that, you know. I really mean that. We're just about out of time. You're welcome back any time. Keep us in. Keep us posted about this situation with this case. It's obviously very important. And I'm sure we'll be talking about it again. And in press and the regulation of the press in this country and freedom of speech anyway going forward. Anywhere you'd like to direct our listeners to find out more, Christine, any website? I mean, I know the website, but you can tell our listeners before we leave it for today. Go ahead.
My website, Christine Joanna Hart Stories, is my blog, and my website is www.christinejoannahart.com. And of course, I'm on Facebook under Christine Joanna Hart, and please join me there, and you can talk to me in Messenger as well. And of course, if you put this on YouTube, then I talk to people underneath, and I'd welcome any wisdom because I feel completely in the dark, you know, about what's going on.
Yeah, it'll be on Podomatic later. The whole show then will be on YouTube later on as well, and you can cut your own interview out of it and put. I mean, I can do that tomorrow as well. I can put the interview on as a standalone part of today's program. Good luck in the next couple of weeks. Look after yourself, right?
Thank you very much, Richie. Take care.
Not
God
at
bless.
All. You too. Bye for now. The brilliant journalist Christine Hart live on the Richie Allen Show. You've been listening to Christine for the last 40 minutes or thereabouts. It's an extraordinary story, really, her own personal story, and we've talked in the past about her own experience of child abuse and mind control, and it's an amazing story. Her career in the media, Fleet Street, every newspaper you can think of, the Mail, the Sunday Times, the Times, the News of the World, and these allegations that when she was at the Priory, she spied on celebrities there and gave that information to her own newspaper and others, and that route still rumbles on. She believes passionately that those who want to bring in a brand new and very draconian regulation of the press in the UK are using these stories, invented stories, as she would say, to justify the need for a much harsher regulation of the press. It's very interesting that, because it segues into so much of what this programme talks about in terms of press freedom as well. It's coming up for 9 minutes past six. It's live. It's the Richie Allen Show, live on Fab Radio 2, triggerwarning.tv, TuneIn Radio, multiple other platforms. It streams round the clock on richieallen.co.uk. Gerald Celente will drop in live from New York City in a minute. The legendary trends researcher. Do subscribe to the Journal. It's fantastic. The New York Post has said about Gerald Celente, if Nostradamus were alive today, he wouldn't be able to keep up with Gerald. So I'm looking forward to catching up with him again in a couple of minutes' time. I think it's time for a pause and a musical break. This is a track from She and Him. It's called Why Do You Let Me Stay Here? Back with more after this. This is your Richie Allen Show. There's none other like it. Support the programme. If you can, go to richieallen.co.uk. That's richieallen.co.uk. There are details there as to how you can do that if you'd like to do it. If you can't do it, don't worry about it. It's very rare for me to mention it, but I've got to mention it every now and then. It's richieallen.co.uk, bank account details and PayPal details as well. You are the only source of funding for this programme. Thank you for supporting it. It's nearly 12 minutes past the hour. Gerald Celente in about 3 minutes' time. Lots of tweets coming in. Thank you for them. To follow what people are telling me, it's very simple. Go to twitter.com, where it says search Twitter, put Richie Allen Show. Richie Allen Show, type it in. No spaces, all one word. Press enter and you'll see what people are tweeting me. Good stuff. Yeah, loads of tweets there. On a variety of subjects. On a variety of subjects. I'm scrolling on down there. Lots of interesting memes. Lots of interesting links to videos and stuff as well. Yeah. I suppose if you're stuck for something to do, you know, on a day that it's absolutely chucking it down outside, there's nothing on the telly, you've not got a book handy, you've not got a decent book handy to read, you could do worse than twitter.com and just going down and looking at the trending things. What's trending on Twitter right now? Debenhams is trending. Anybody who's visited Manchester will have seen Debenhams in Market Street, just by the tram stop there in Market Street. And there's a big presence in Manchester for many years. It's gone into administration, of course. If you followed that story, you'll know that Sports Direct and Mike Ashley, he wants to take over Debenhams. That's trending on Twitter. Perfidious Albion is trending on Twitter. Perfidious Albion. What's that all about? Something to do with the European Research Group and Brussels. Yeah, Perfidious Albion. I don't know what that's about. It's not a football thing. It's to do with the European Union. But yeah, you could do worse than scroll down the old Twitter thing there. Yeah. Alrighty. Okay, right. While we wait for Gerald, just a very quick rundown of what is making the news. The BBC.co.uk, if we got that there, we have BBC.co.uk/news, full of Debenhams, which Mike Ashley has called a national scandal. It's full of a story about a struck off doctor called Hadiza Bawa Garba, who was struck off back in 2015 for gross negligence, which resulted in a baby's death, a child called Jack Adcock. She's apparently going to return to work. There's a story, of course, about Theresa May. Mentioned this back in the monologue. Theresa May meeting with Emmanuel Macron and Angela Merkel today, begging and pleading for an extension to the Article 50 process. May would like that to be until June 30th, but they want it to be much longer. Of course they do, and I think we'll be talking about this on the programme for the rest of the week, I think. Shall we introduce the legendary trends researcher? Fantastic, been predicting geopolitical and economic trends for many, many years. I subscribe to the journal. That's trendsresearch.com. If you haven't subscribed to it before, I recommend it. Check out Trends in the News, which is terrific fun, great fun, but again, packed with vital information that you won't get anywhere else. As I'm talking to you, again, I'm having a little problem with the old connection, as I did with Christine earlier on. So I might have to take another track there. I don't want to be honest. I want to get straight into chatting with Gerald, but there might be a wee problem there with the old connection. As usual, I'd like to hear what you've got to say. If there's something you'd like me to mention to Gerald Celente on your behalf, it is very simple. All you got to do is tweet it. Tweet it to @RichieAllenShow, and I'll get on to him. I'll make that comment to him there, okay? Primal Scream? Yes? Yes? No? Yes? Yes.
We want to be free to do what we want to.
Sometimes things just don't work, you know.
Loaded. And we want to have a good time.
Not that it's ever bothered me. This is Loaded from Primal Scream. Hopefully, in about 30 seconds, we'll have Gerald Celente. It's not working. Nothing is working.
Just what is it that you...
Ah, there you are.
We want to be free. We want to
car crash stuff, eh?
We want to do.
You'd imagine, you'd be forgiven for imagining that this is an amateur operation. It's anything but.
We're going to have a good time.
Anyway, it's working now. This is Primal Scream and Loaded. Gerald Celente in about 30, 40 seconds time. How about that? All right. Right, let's get rid of that. Primal Scream and Loaded. Welcoming back to the programme live from New York City. Legendary trends researcher, the New York Post, saying in the past... Very apt, by the way. If Nostradamus was around today, he'd have nothing on the forecasting ability of the brilliant Gerald Celente. Check out trendsresearch.com. Check out Trends in the News, which is hilariously funny, but very sharp, very on point, and telling you things, discussing things that you don't hear anywhere else. It's always a great pleasure to welcome back our friend Gerald Celente. Gerald, thanks for coming back on. How are you?
Oh, it's always great being on with you, Richie, and thanks for all that you do to inform people about so many things that they can't hear just about anywhere else. So thanks. You do a great job out there, and the people out there should be supporting you 1,000%.
You're very kind to say that. And you know,
it's true. No, particularly in this age of censorship. And again, that was one of our top trends for 2019. Censorship 2019. If you don't do what they want you to do or say they want you the way they want you to say it, you know, they really take a hit on you. And they've done it to us. They've taken down some of our work and flagged it because, for example, I called about an economic 9/11 at one time. So you're not allowed to say 9/11 anymore. They flagged me because I called that guy Beto O'Rourke, who's running for the congressman that's running for president in the presidential reality show, a white Obama. Not allowed to say that. So the Richie Allen Show is a show where you're saying what you believe based on facts and information, but the censorship from the UK to Russia, from the USA to France, it's just becoming worse and worse each day.
And you did say this to me back in January. You have made it a big trend for 2019, and That's not you, you know, giving yourself a pat on the back, which you don't do anyway. It's a fact that you saw this coming and predicted this, and here we are. How important is it then that whatever your politics, whether you're find yourself on the left, whether you think you're a socialist or whether you think you're a conservative, how important is it that you stand up against the blocking and deleting of your opponents? This is massive, isn't it, Gerald? So you don't like Tommy Robinson, for example. Okay, you don't like Tommy Robinson, but don't laugh and don't applaud when he's deleted or when he's marginalised. That's not very clever, is it?
No, or with Alex Jones, same thing. You know, I mean, I go on Alex Jones. I even host a show there. He lets me say what I want. You know, I don't agree with him on a lot of issues. He doesn't agree with me. But I say what I want to say, regardless of whose show that I'm on. And you want to talk about conspiracy theories and lies? How about this one, Richie? Did I ever tell you that guy Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction and ties to Al-Qaeda?
Yeah.
Yeah. How about that for an outright lie that cost the lives of millions of people, spent trillions of dollars destroying an entire nation? That's okay. It's okay when the official murderers and thieves, the sociopaths and psychopaths that people call their politicians, when they commit the crimes of using, quote, fake news to destroy and kill, that's okay. Hey, look what's going on in Libya right now. Isn't it wonderful over there? You know, the Nobel Peace of Crap Prize winner, the arrogant Obama that all those liberals love. I gotta tell you, Richie, I don't like the way that guy Gaddafi's treating his people over there in the richest nation in Africa with the sweetest of sweet crude oil. And we're going to destroy the place along with that other piece of garbage, Cameron, that little boy of nothing over there that was the prime minister of the UK. Or how about the FU something K? Yeah. And how about that Sarkozy, another little piece of crap of nothing? How about those guys, that clown from France? How about Hillary Clinton, Samantha Power, and Susan Rice in the U.S. that destroyed Libya? That's okay. Don't raise your voice. We are in charge. We'll murder who we want for every reason we make want, but you're not allowed to say what you believe on what used to be called the free internet because we control it.
What do you think this week? Again, you're not surprised because you forecast it, of course. Trendsresearch.com, by the way, folks, if you haven't visited Gerald before, if you're new to this program, get over there straight away. You forecast this week, last week, the UK government said we're going to introduce the most stringent regulations ever imposed on the internet, and we're going to compel the big carriers to take down information that we deem to be hateful or to be harassing or to be fake news, information that we deem to be incorrect. Now, you've just touched on this here, on the lies that we were told for years. We were told lies that Gaddafi was killing his own people. We were told that, you know, people were being brutalised there. We're being told the same about Venezuela now, the same old lies told by the same old lawyers. Has that come in now into the UK? Let's talk about the UK just for a minute. These new regulations that are being imposed by the UK government. You did predict this was coming. Did you think it was coming as quickly as we've seen it happen this year?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah, no, because all of these sick people want to stay in power and they don't want to be threatened by anyone. And that's what's going on. And so, no, it's only going to get much worse. As I said, whether it's China, Russia, the U.S., or the U.K., you name the country, they're all doing it. And so the people, there's no freedom anymore. And you're going to start seeing as, again, you see this ties into many different trends. And the major trend being the inequality of the 1% owning, what do you have? Let me get the number right. I think it's around 46 people or 53, something like that, have more money than half the world's population combined.
Yeah, that's right.
In the United States, we have three people Bill Gates, Buffett, and Bezos that have more money than half of the American population combined. So what I'm going back to censorship, there are, and again, look what's going on in Algeria. Take a trip to Sudan. You've been to the Congo lately? Wonderful times going on now in South Africa. Oh, isn't it great what they did in Argentina? Yeah, they're going to bring in a guy there that's a real smart businessman, and he's going to straighten things out. And now they have a 65% interest rate. And let's see, the pesos lost about 100% since the last couple of years. So they're going to be putting down the revolutions. They're going to quiet everybody down when they try to rebel. And they're taking over the media. They already have the print and broadcast media. And now they're going to take over the internet. It's as clear as can be. And again, and I forgot about the EU. I forgot to put them in there too.
Yeah, and Brexit. Again, last year, you were saying to me, in fact, in 2016, you were one of the rare voices, you know, across the pond in your neck of the woods. You saw it coming that it wouldn't be allowed to happen. We talked about this just after the vote in June 2016. I never believed it would be allowed to happen. I've been following the European Union and its treaties, Nice and Maastricht and Lisbon, for years. The Irish voted against it, the French did, the Danes did, and we were all told we were wrong. Go back and vote again until you give us the result we want. When the referendum, when the people voted to leave the European Union, you very correctly and quickly said, well, watch this one very closely over the next couple of years. This is not going to happen. What do you expect will happen in terms of, do you look at it from over there, Gerald, in New York, and do you think, I wonder what will people do about this? As the vote is ignored and mocked and laughed at and is torn up and the UK does not leave the European Union, what sort of reaction do you expect from people? Or do you think, well, it'll just be the same old, same old?
Well, you know, what I say about trends is that current events form future trends. So I saw it happening with Greece prior to what happened with the Brexit vote. And that was that other little slime ball piece of garbage, Tsipras over there,
Yeah. The
clown leading that show. The people had a vote not to accept the austerity measures from the International Mafia Federation that morons, imbeciles, and jerks call the International Monetary Fund. And so the Greek people overwhelmingly voted against the austerity measures. And Tsipras basically told them, go screw yourself. We could Greece? Oh, you mean there was a guy named Aristotle and Plato and you people, they wrote about democracy? Oh, that was history. There's no democracy, you stupid morons out there that go out to vote. Your vote doesn't count for crap. We are the elite. We tell you what to do. So take your vote and shove it. We could care less that you had a referendum and said you don't want these austerity measures, which are basically, we're going to steal your money to give it to the German banksters that did this dirty deal and put you deep in debt. And we're going to rob from you your pensions. We're going to rob from you social programs. Oh, we're going to put your retirement age. We're going to up it to retirement age till after you die. Then you could get some money. So we saw what happened with that. And we see the lack of fight that people have. They only go for so long, then they back down. And that's what we saw happening. And that's why I said, people also forget what happened prior to the vote, the Brexit vote, with that, what was it, a woman that was killed?
Joe Cox, a Labour Party member of Parliament, 1 week before the vote was due to take place. She was allegedly murdered by a man called Thomas Mayer. I don't mean to be cheap. She might have been murdered by Thomas Mayer. It might have happened that way, but the circumstances were very strange. But yeah, she was murdered allegedly by a very pro-nationalist man called Thomas Mayer. Joe Cox, Gerald, that's right, yeah.
Right, so now, even with that happening, they then, you know, the vote swung way the other way against leaving, against the Brexit vote. But then when they voted for Brexit. They voted to leave despite that happening. So if that didn't happen, the vote would have even been larger.
Yeah. She was definitely murdered, that woman. Terrible. It must have been a terrible thing. Young woman.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm not.
Oh, I know you know.
That.
No, I know you're not. No, I know. I'm covering myself.
Because somebody doesn't misinterpret what I'm saying. I appreciate that.
No, you're absolutely right.
Going back to it, when it happened in Greece was the foundation for my knowing what would happen with Brexit.
Yeah, you got it spot on. I've been asked to put things to you. We've probably got another 10, 15 minutes left, however much time you can spare us in the next 10 or 15 minutes. It's Gerald Celente, trendsresearch.com. Brilliant broadcaster, terrific writer, and has been successfully, accurately predicting economic and geopolitical trends for a long time, folks. He really has. Check out the journal if you haven't checked it out before. I've been asked to ask you, this is the gospel truth. It's on Twitter there. People can see it. People are worried about a trend, a particular trend. And I know you've written about this and talked about this going back some time. A trend towards a cashless society and how dangerous that is for people, for ordinary folks, for working folks. We reported on this programme only last year, even back in 2017. Cash machines are disappearing. That's your hole in the wall, as we know them, as more and more people using their cell phones to pay, using the contactless cards to pay. And some of our listeners are saying that's very worrying because in the hands of a totalitarian state, it's dangerous for us. What do you think about the trend towards cashless? You're not happy about that?
No, because what it is, the reason they're going cashless is so they could monitor every penny that you spent so they could get their cut of it. Their taxes, simple as that. And also, next time a crash happens, you know, once upon a time in America, you can't make these names up. They had a bank holiday. Isn't that nice holiday?
Yeah.
We're on a holiday.
We have them, yeah.
Yeah, you can't get your money anyway. It's a holiday. And so they had, it was during the Great Depression. And in 1933, FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, got elected. And they immediately called a bank holiday, which means you couldn't get your money out of the bank. And what they also did is that they said you couldn't own gold anymore. You had to turn in all your gold. That's right. Oh, and you can't get into your bank to go into the safety deposit boxes. We'll go in there with you to see what you have in there. So, and again, what people also forget, when 9/11 happened in the States, you know, they closed Wall Street down for almost a week. You know, so if you had certificates of deposit, CDs, you couldn't cash them in. So with the cashless society, knowing where things are going, and with the massive amounts of $250 trillion plus in debt that the world has, when this explodes, they'll be in charge. You won't be able to get your money. They'll give you as much as they want, when they want, and at what value they want to give it to you. It's all in place. It's there for everyone to see that has an open mind and doesn't believe in the political freaks and the parties that they love so much. People in the United States call them the Republicans or the Democrats, being that they're murderers and thieves. By their deeds you shall know them. I call them the Bloods and the Crips. So the Bloods and the Crips, the central banksters, are in charge, and they have cashless society so they can shaft you out of your money anytime that they want and keep the proceeds of every penny that you spent that they call tax dollars.
You said something years ago, and I think you were, I don't think anybody's ever, look, I mean, you've got your opponents, of course, and people who want to prevent you from doing what you do and stop you. I don't think anybody's ever, you know, taken you on, had the courage to properly take you on face to face. But you've had your critics when you've said things. You talked about, years ago, you talked about bail-ins. You talked about that years ago. You said there'll come a day when countries, when citizens will be told, listen, your country is in debt. We're going to go into your bank accounts. And you must have been laughed at the time, Gerald. But then they did it in Cyprus. Right? And if you've got a cashless society, you can do it. You can do it anytime.
You got it. That's why they want to go cashless, and they're going to. And they're going, look, in Sweden, a lot of places, people aren't using any cash. And it's going to be even bigger in China. And China, you know, China's, you know, one of my sayings is that the business of America's war, guns and butter. In China, the business of China's business. China's going to be taking over the world. They have the second largest economy now. In about 10 years, they'll way be bigger than the United States. Before China was allowed into the World Trade Organization, brought to you by Bill Clinton, and then they came in officially 2 weeks after 9/11 when no one was watching, only 5% of the Chinese population was middle class. Today, over 35% is. There are more Chinese middle class than America has as a nation combined, plus another 100 million.
Amazing.
So they're buying up the world, and they're buying up ports, they're buying up mines. Oh, they're just in Italy. They're now going into Trieste and redoing the port over there. Could you imagine that the Italians need the Chinese to help their economy move ahead? And it's not only there, it's throughout Africa, Eastern Europe, and South America. So as we're looking, going back to cashless society, China, it's becoming cashless already, and that's a population of 1.4 billion people. People pay with their apps. Oh, by the way, you know, I don't carry a cell phone. I have an old-fashioned flip phone that I put in the glove compartment of my car when I travel. And, of course, when I travel, you know, on an airplane and I have to – the car pick me up or I have to go somewhere, you know, I use the phone for that. But other than that, I don't use a phone at all. Matter of fact, if my life depended on it, I'd be too stupid to use a smartphone.
I wouldn't say too stupid, but they are pretty sophisticated these days. At least the latest models are. Anyway, Gerald Celente is our guest. We've got Gerald for another 5-6 minutes. Check out trendsresearch.com, folks. I can't recommend it highly enough. What about, I wanted to ask you about this. The last time you were on was in January. Since you've been on, and again, back in the day, it sounds like I'm bigging you up, but I'm not. I've just got to be honest about it. You were a rare breed back in the day, talking about the influence of the neocon groups and also talking about the influence of the Israeli lobby in the United States. We were very interested here, and I know you've talked about this on Trends in the News, about the reaction to a Democratic Congresswoman, Ilhan Omar, who dared to talk about the extent of the Israeli lobby influence in the United States of America. It's very relevant, obviously, today. There's an election taking place in Israel. Not that it matters, really, which of them gets in, whether it's Benny Gantz or Netanyahu. But also in this country, you know, anybody who dares mention Israel's influence in this country is likely to be harassed and hounded and threatened with blocking and all the rest of it. What did you make of what happened when Ilhan Omar dared to mention the nefarious influence of the Israeli lobby?
Well, it's the beginning of a change, and she didn't back down on it. And again, you expect that to happen. You know, this Beto O'Rourke, who I'm not a fan of at all as a person, he came out against Netanyahu just a couple of days ago. And he said that Netanyahu sided with a racist party, and he really called him out. And so that was really quite surprising for me. And I think you're hearing a number of other people in the Democratic presidential reality show race that are also saying that, you know, going after them. And it's an apartheid state, and it's very clear now. So I think that the influence of Israel on the United States is going to lessen in the coming years.
This is interesting. Can I ask you about this? Is the Democratic Party interest in criticizing Israel, is that in any way motivated by their hatred of Donald Trump? Would this not be happening?
I don't think so.
No?
But I think that Donald Trump pushed it forward a bit by his coming out with Netanyahu running for re-election, having him over here in the States, and him saying that Netanyahu was right in saying that they own the Golan Heights.
Yeah.
So that kind of brought it back to a negative position on that aspect.
None of that surprised you, of course, Trump saying that Israel had the rights over the Golan Heights. You saw that coming a million miles away. Where is Trump now, Gerald, in terms of just in the last couple of minutes before we let you go? I know you've got plenty of other calls to do today and stuff. Where, in terms of where, what are we now? We're early March 2019. Obviously, the election is next year. Is Trump, is he a shoo-in for a second term? Or is there a credible challenger coming from, if not from the Democratic Party? Could someone emerge from out of the wilderness, almost like Trump kind of did himself? What do you think is going to happen in the next 12 months?
I don't see anybody emerging. There's no one out there that I could imagine this happening. Because remember, Trump wanted to run for many, many years. And we talked about, Beto O'Rourke saying that Netanyahu is racist and he doesn't represent the will of the Israeli people. You know, that's new, but in that characteristic. But don't forget, too, that Trump is alleged to have gotten $30 million from that fellow over there that owns all those gambling casinos. The name just escaped me.
Adelson, yeah, Sheldon Adelson, that's the one.
Yeah, Adelson, yeah. And so going back to the elections, there is no strong Democratic candidate now, and there are a bunch of them. Again, it's the presidential reality show. Trump has a chance of winning again, and I'll tell you why. Back in 1992, when Bill Clinton ran, the campaign slogan was, behind the doors, not to the public, it's the economy, stupid. The United States was going through difficult times following the 1987 stock market crash. And that's what it is today. It's the economy, stupid. The majority of Americans are positive on Trump when it comes to the economy. The other one's going to be the border and the migrant issue. While the media plays it down and saying that anybody against open borders is racist and non-American because our ancestors came here. They brought the ancestors over, the Italians, the Poles, the Irish, the others, because they needed workers when they were building the country. It's a very different situation now. Now you have median household income below 1999 levels. We don't need more workers. We need higher wages. The more workers you have, the more people work for lower wages for the multinationals who control so much. Going back to the election. In America, you have an electoral college. So it's how many electoral votes you get. So in the swing states, they're very anti-open borders, and they're very pro-Trump's economic policy relative to trade. So he may win enough of those swing states, as he did losing the popular vote to Hillary Clinton, to get reelected. Even though there's a massive amount of people that dislike him, they're concentrated more in the major cities, in the East and in the West, in the California, the Oregon, the Washington State, and in the East, the New York, the New Jerseys, the Boston, that type of thing. So he may win the swing states and still win the election. To me, it's still up in the air.
It's still up in the air. And the absolute final question, sorry to do this for you now, 30 seconds.
No. I love being on with you.
Well, thanks for that, Gerald. We love having you. Final question then. I love a good old conspiracy theory. So staying with, just for a moment, Israel, could the attack, if you want to call it that, on Netanyahu by Beto O'Rourke, could it be that the establishment is tired of Netanyahu? They're just tired of him. Because Benny Gantz is no better. Ultimately then, in my opinion, to be fair, just in my opinion, Gantz is just another former IDF guy, looks like he's in the centre, pretends or claims that he wants to reopen peace talks. I don't believe any of this. Could it be that the establishment think that this guy could be a bit more palatable and that Netanyahu has run his course? I wonder, is that the reason for the attacks on Bibi Netanyahu? Final question, what do you think?
I don't think so.
No,
I really don't. This Benny Gantz, isn't he the guy that he boasted that Gaza was bombed back to the Stone Ages.
Yeah, he oversaw the last horrible Operation Protective Edge back in 2014. He commanded that. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely.
Yeah. So
horrible.
So yeah. So there is no middle road in this election. And with Netanyahu, yeah, they probably some are coming out against him because he is so friendly. I would agree with you, but I wouldn't call it. I wouldn't call it a a deep state move. I would call it a Democrat move, in the sense that the Democrats know they'll never get the allegiance of a Netanyahu, and he owes his allegiance to Trump.
Right.
So that's why they're coming out against him.
Makes perfect sense to me, that. Mate, I love having you on. Don't wait to be invited back. Gerald, thanks for giving us your time. Trendsresearch.com, trends in the news. Subscribe to the journal, accurately predicting geopolitical and economic trends for many years. Gerald, thanks, mate. Love having you on. Speak again real soon.
And thank you. And thank you again for all that you do, Richie.
You're a gentleman. Thanks, Gerald. The great Gerald Celente, live on the line from New York City there. Great to have him on. Trendsresearch.com. I'll put a link out to it in case you're new to this programme. Long-time listeners will, of course, know all about Gerald. That's very interesting, that, isn't it? I think he's on. I think I'd probably lean towards what he said there at the end. I was thinking when some of these Democrats were coming out of the woodwork to criticise Netanyahu in a way that the Israeli Prime Minister, whether it's Netanyahu or somebody else, has never been criticised before. I thought that, well, maybe this is a ruse, basically. They want to get Gantz in because Netanyahu is so obnoxious anyway, and he's been around for so long, that let's get some criticism of him. That creates a false narrative that there is genuine criticism of Israel in the United States, which there isn't. Not in politics, anyway. Yeah, Ilhan Omar, of course, came out and said what she said, and more power to her for doing so. But generally, across the American political spectrum, there is no general criticism of Israel. We've seen what's happened to people who've taken on the Israeli lobby, namely, of course, Cynthia McKinney. Of course, being the obvious one. So it's an intriguing situation, that. I'm going to take a tune. When I come back from that, I'm going to read some of your tweets, because lots of them came in. I've got Lightning Seed lined up. Yes, indeed, it's the Lightning Seed on the Richie Allen Show. 12 and a half minutes, 13 and a half minutes even, to the top of the hour. It is Tuesday, April 9th. So your comments are next. Keep them coming in. Plenty of time to tweet me. It's at Richie Allen Show. So as I said, tweets after this from the Lightning Seeds. Music from the Lightning Seeds on the Richie Allen Show. A song called Sense. It's exactly 10 minutes to the top of the hour. Oh, yeah. A very warm studio. Unusually warm for this time of year. But the sun has been baiting. It's been beating in the window of the studio all day, so it's a warm old studio. Hi to Phil in Florida, my old pal. Phil, that song is called Sense, as in Richie Allen has very little sense, and it's by The Lightning Seeds. Phil is in Florida. I don't think The Lightning Seeds made it to Florida. Very successful Liverpudlian band, must be said. Very good band. Saw them live several times over the years. Most recently in Manchester a couple of years ago, they supported Madness. About 3 years ago. Because Madness have been back since. We love Madness. The future herself and myself love Madness. Madness have been back since. But yeah, the Lightning Seeds, brilliant. Mr. Brody, brilliant. Sense is the song, Phil. Download it there. It sounds like it's got you. Good song. Great tune. Thanks for the tweets that came in during the chat with Gerald. Patrick seems to think, I like Patrick's tweets, but I disagree with him. You see, I think it's the Neo thing. We're never getting out of this madness. We're stuck in this mad matrix. Patrick thinks we will have the cabal on a piece of toast eventually. Richie thinks we won't be leaving the European Union, but he's wrong, says Patrick. Maybe not this round. But many of us won't let this Brexit betrayal pass, and the UK will be the trendsetter, says Patrick. And Patrick, of course, nobody made me the doyen of the alternative media. Nobody made me an expert. I'm not an expert. I hope I'm wrong and I hope you're right. But I don't see it, Patrick. But I'm not going to editorialise there because I've had my say, my friend, and you've had your say. On Thomas Mayer and Joe Cox, Murray says, how are you, Murray? Mayer had a trial but said nothing. And his lawyer said nothing in his defence. And his family were told not to attend court. Could it have been some body double in court there, asks Murray. What I remember most about the arrest of Thomas Mayer was his neighbours. Now, often when somebody is arrested for a shooting or for a high-profile murder, you do get the occasional, his mum will say, I can't believe it, it was so out of character, and maybe some of his friends will say, I can't believe it. With Thomas Mayer, it was striking how many people came forward, including a nurse, a registered nurse, who lived near him and said, lived very near him, and she flat out said she didn't believe it was him. I don't believe it. I can't comprehend it, she said. He was a really lovely fella. He was very active in the community. He was known to be nice and gentle and kind and sweet. And a lot of other people said that as well. And at the time, there were certain independent media types who suggested that there might have been a psychotropic medicine link to Thomas Mayer. I don't know, you know. I don't know. I remember when Lee Rigby was murdered. There were certain people. One famous, one person got jailed, or at least was fined heavily, might have been jailed, for sending communications to Lee Rigby's mother, suggesting that it was a complete hoax and he never died. And look, I just find that ridiculous. You know, people do get killed. Yes, sometimes it is party A killing somebody to make it look like party B did it, the essence of the false flag. But there are people in the independent media who take it very far with hoaxes and never happened and all this sort of stuff. I believe Joe Cox was murdered. Did Thomas Mayer do it? He might have done. Was he under the influence of something? Maybe he was. Was he influenced by a third party? Because it's alleged that he shouted nationalist slogans as he was stabbing Joe Cox and shooting her. It's a very bizarre case. And the timing of it was incredible. You know, there are those who say that it was designed to throw the vote for Remain. But again, it's very easy to make these proclamations. And I'm not saying that it's not smelly. Of course it's smelly. But how can you proclaim that you know everything? Oh yeah, yeah, the deep state did it to persuade everybody to vote Remain. Well, any proof, by the way, seeing as you said that, would you give us some proof, even some circumstantial evidence? Oh, you're just a fucking shill, Richie. No, I'm not saying it's impossible. I would just like to see some hard evidence. Then I could maybe go on the radio and not make a complete tit of myself. See, I won't say that it was a hoax or a false flag because I don't know. But it was smelly. I will give you that, Murray. It was a very smelly thing, no doubt about it. And that's all I can say because I know nothing else. Her ex-husband, Brendan Cox. When I say her ex-husband, that's unfair. Why did I say that? I don't know. Her widow. Widower. Very interesting man. And some of the things he said and the way he behaved in the days and weeks after she died was bizarre. But I could put it down to somebody being absolutely destroyed with grief, having found out that his young wife had been murdered. But there's a lot going on. But look, the mainstream media just basically wraps it up, puts a bow on it and says, there you go. There is no investigation. What does the intelligence community say? they say that Thomas Mayer killed her. Right, okay, that's what we will report then. That's not sound journalism, I'll give you that. Anyway, I'm out of here now, more or less. More or less. Big thanks to Christine Hart, the journalist, for coming on the programme in the first hour. I really appreciate Christine coming on. Very important. Watch that closely, that story. And it's always a real thrill to have my old friend Gerald Celente on the show as well. Just to let you know, in case you're new to the programme, it can be downloaded anytime through richieallen.co.uk. Because on my homepage, you've got the live stream on the left, you've got the YouTube video in the middle, and on the right hand, you've got the link to Podomatic, so you can download it as an MP3. The programme, of course, is available on iTunes and on Spotify as well, if you want to find it there. It's a nice way to share the programme on social media. Use iTunes, Spotify or Podomatic. And for the meantime, or for the foreseeable future, until I get tired of doing it, because there is no gain in it, I will continue to upload the programme to YouTube every day for the time being. But it is a pain in the arse, and there's nothing in it for me. Right? Right? Okay. Yeah, all right. Okay, I've said it. Right, okay. A lot of comments coming in about Thomas Mayer, by the way. And, look, maybe we'll revisit that again in the near future, but it's difficult. What do you say? Where's the proof? You know, this is the thing. It's difficult with the resources available to me. You can allow people speculate only up to a point, then you've got to stop them and say, listen, give me some bloody evidence. All right, thank you. I love you for listening. Thanks for listening. It wouldn't be anything if you didn't listen. See you tomorrow on the Richie Allen Show for Wednesday at 5 p.m. as usual, leaving you with the great Satchmo. Proper genius here. Louis Armstrong. Closing out the Richie Allen Show. Look after yourselves and one another. See you tomorrow. Bye for now. We have on.